This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to Health and Living with me, Lim Soo Ann. You are listening to an episode of our Humans of Healthcare series, and today we are featuring the role of the sports medicine physician. Now, as the name suggests, sports medicine physicians often work with professional and amateur athletes to ensure that, you know, they're always able to play at their level best. But what exactly do they do? Do they only work with athletes? How are they different from other specializations such as orthopedic surgeons or even rehab physicians or even physiotherapists, right? These are all questions that I'll be asking Dr. Arvind Raj. And if you have any questions you'd like to ask, you can call us at 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp us at our U-Mobile phone number at 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. Dr. Arvind, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yep, it's great to be here again.
Glad to have you back on. And today, you know, hopefully we would inspire some of our listeners who are thinking of pursuing medicine or in the field of medicine that, you know, this is the specialization that they want to go into.
Right.
And to start then, Dr. Arvind, you know, what exactly is sports medicine?
Okay, yeah. I think that what you correctly said, sports medicine is a field that by name, I mean, the word itself says sports, right? Mm. You would think that we will only work with professional and amateur athletes. But to be honest, sports medicine has actually evolved through time. And now we actually are trying to move towards sports and exercise medicine. All right. So, but because the name has stuck on for so long, so changing it to sports exercise medicine is not globally accepted just yet. Mm. But in trying to define what sports medicine does, we have, I guess, two broad group of people we work with. We work with the people with musculoskeletal injuries. So that means intervention, treatment, pain management of people with musculoskeletal injuries. And we also work on the public side, whereby we work on prevention. Mm. All right. So to be honest, we are working mostly on managing medical problems of exercising individuals of all ages and all levels of participation. So from professional all the way to someone who's exercising just for health. Mm. And then we go on to people who have a biomechanical problem, pathophysiological problem, and we are working to optimize those things. So by definition, we do work to optimize. So we work with other groups of people, like people who are mobility experts, biomechanists, to see if we can actually improve the outcome of said person. And then we also have people who we use exercise as therapeutic modalities. Mm. That means it's not always about giving medications or injections. It's sometimes just using exercise as the treatment itself. And last but not least, we do promotion of health. So you'll see us going out at state level, national level, doing promotional work of the importance of exercise, proper nutrition to prevent diseases or to even reduce the risk of diseases. So this is what we actually do most of the time.
Mm. So then if I could dive in a bit into what you do in clinic, for example, just to paint a picture to our listeners, what kind of conditions then do patients come and see you with, considering all these things that you say you do?
So most of the patients that I do see are musculoskeletal related injuries, mm. but they are not often athletes. Mm. About 50% of the people I deal with are working class adults from different occupations. I'm talking about lorry drivers, factory workers, you know, people who are cleaners and people who are office job workers, because they all present with different kinds of musculoskeletal-like injuries. Normally, it's the spine and shoulder issues. When you're talking about hip, knee and ankle problems, definitely you do get those people who are athletic, but you do get uncles and aunties and grandmas and grandpas who come to me for the same condition, because not everyone who is 70 years old is sedentary at home. I have an auntie who is 64 years old who still runs a 42K marathon.
Mm, wow.
So if she has knee pain, she comes to me because I'm the one who's going to be able to help her to run another 42K. So yeah, so I actually treat a broad range of people, but yes, mostly it's musculoskeletal related injuries.
Mm. Do you see conditions that are outside of the musculoskeletal problem?
To be honest, no. Mm. Even if I do, someone comes to me with, say, a limb weakness, mm. and they think it's because of the pain. And then with examinations and so on, I found out it's actually Parkinson's.
Mm.
You know, so because there are signs and symptoms for Parkinson's, which weakness is also probably one of them. So once I find out it's Parkinson's, I'll refer them to the person who can actually treat this better, which is a neurologist.
Mm.
Yeah.
So speaking of the neurologist, then I want to use this to segue into the question about how your role is different from other specializations, mm-hmm. right? Because you say, Dr. Arvind, you see people with musculoskeletal problems. How are you different from what, especially an orthopedic surgeon or a rehab physician does?
Okay, so I think with orthopedic surgeons, it's pretty clear cut. They are surgical experts. We are the non-surgical experts. Mm. So there are points of time where we actually work together. So I work in the field of sports medicine, and that means we have a lot of sports surgeries. ACL reconstructions, shoulder reconstructions, hip problems and so on, ankle operations and so on. So when the surgeon needs to optimize this person for an operation, they send it to us first. So basically, we try to optimize the outcomes, get them to be more functional before the operation. Because if someone goes into an operation with better function, the outcome of the operation is a lot better. Mm. And then post-operatively, we actually continue to manage them till they get back to their level of activity. It could be sports, it could be their daily living. So that's how we work with orthopedic surgeons. Then there are conditions where the orthopedicians, okay, especially in the government setting, right? Orthopedicians really have their hands full.
Mm-hmm.
So they might not be able to attend to every non-surgical case. So this is where the sports physicians lends a hand to actually offload them and actually help them manage those cases. And we do get to spend more time with the patients. So in this case, we are able to also spend a bit more time in investigating on what are the problems that is leading to the problem, and then we try to solve it. Now, if you're talking about rehab physicians, it's a bit different. Rehab physicians also do work with musculoskeletal problems, but they do work with the more pathological problems. You're talking about muscle spasticities, like people who have cerebral palsy, who needs Botox injections, you know, those kind of things. People who have people who are amputees, you know. So the rehab physicians help there. People who have neurological disorders, then the rehab physician comes in. So they're talking about even stroke care. Stroke care.
Mm.
Then you have people who had a bypass surgery. So they're not readily available to go back to activity at a community level. They have to be phased in slowly from the point of bypass to the point they are acceptable at a community level. So the rehab physicians, their cardiac rehab physicians, actually help them get out of the post-operative stage right up to the point there. And then when they reach the stage, they can go to the community, then they pass it to a sports physician to take over. Yeah.
So it's almost like you're passing the baton from one to another.
Correct. I've even had like stroke cases, right? Mm. Initially, they start off with some weakness and the stroke rehab physicians help them with. But then they say they develop some sort of weakness that, I mean, majority of the stroke symptoms have gone, but there's some residual weakness or tightness and so on. And then they get us to help them to help the patients get a bit more better. Mm. Yeah.
So when a patient walks into your clinic, right, what are you assessing them for?
So it really goes on what their complaint is.
Mm.
So whatever, actually in whichever medical field, it always starts off with what the patient's problem is. So the patient has to tell me what is their problem. It could be a shoulder pain, it could be knee stiffness, whatever it is. So I will work off that.
Mm.
So once I get an idea of what their problem is, then my following examinations and investigation will be catered to actually like trying to dial down to a diagnosis or at least a few provisional diagnoses, and I'll start ruling them out. So that's basically what I normally do with my patients.
Mm. And then what kind of treatments do you offer? Because like you said, right, you're not doing the surgical bit. Sometimes you're offering exercise as treatment. Yeah. How does that work?
So much like what physiotherapists will do, I just have the upper advantage of investigating what's going on.
Mm.
So for instance, if they come in with, say, an inside knee pain, so I get to do a bedside ultrasound and see what's the problem. So if it comes after a football injury, then I can kind of find out where the problem was. And based on the grade of the issue, I will decide to either just do physical therapy, which where my friends from the physiotherapy comes in and help me with it. And we will work hand in hand to see if the patient's getting better. So I get to investigate and see if the patient's progressing. And then we talk to each other to make sure that the progress is in par with what we want to see. But on the other hand, if you have cases where I have to intervene, so that means I have to do injections, I have to do aspirations and so on, I will also do that based on what the diagnosis is. So my interventions are not just always prescribing exercise or rehabilitative exercises. Sometimes I have to do interventions, prescribe medications to actually aid the patient to recover.
We have someone on WhatsApp asking, you know, why are there more orthopedic surgeons than sports medicine specialists? And especially because if, you know, sports medicine complements orthopedic surgeons, why is there that disproportionate number? Do you see medical students going into this route?
Okay, it's actually a very good question. So you have to see the history of sports medicine. History of sports medicine started off during the Commonwealth Games in 1998. We were actually a branch of rehab medicine initially.
Mm.
But because we were catering our expertise to people who are more in the active population, So I guess the head at that point realized that we probably have to split off into a group that actually manages pathological cases and a group that manages sports-related cases. Mm-hmm. So hence the birth of sports medicine in Malaysia. Then if you look at the master's career itself, mm-hmm. when I was doing my master's, there was only 4 spots in the entire country to do master's.
Wow.
I was
4,
one of them.
4 sports 4. Medicine.
1, 2, 3, 4. So you have to sit for an entrance exam and then less than 10% gets in. You know, so it was definitely a lot harder back then. But things are improving. They have increased the number of allocations for that. And we are getting more sports physicians being spread out throughout the country. Used to be really concentrated in Klang Valley. Now right up to Alostar, Perlis, we already have sports physicians being sent off. So it is slowly growing. Because orthopedic is definitely much older than us in career pathways. Mm. So I think in future, we will see more of us out there.
Mm. Do you think perception from the public also matters? Because sometimes the public aren't as aware of what a sports medicine physician does compared to an orthopedic surgeon.
Of course, that is very, very true. Hence why I'm thanking social media for this.
Mm.
Okay, social media has given us an opportunity to actually spread this information, and slowly the awareness is growing. With that being said, I'm not saying the orthopedicians are not important.
Mm.
It's just that they've had their hands so full for so long. I think sometimes some orthopedicians are like, whew, somebody's taking up the load for us. You know? Mm. Yeah. So, yeah. So, and with medical students, actually, that's another thing. But with, again, the advent of social media, medical students are seeing this as an opportunity. And I've gotten medical students coming in attaching with me to see, like, what do I do on a daily basis? What are the interventions I do? And how do we look at treating people? You know, I talk about biomechanics and kinematics and when I'm assessing patients. So this really intrigues them because it's not just about popping some pain medication and off you go. So there's a lot more to it.
All right. We'll go for a quick break and continue this discussion. When we come back on the show with me today is consultant sports medicine physician Dr. Arvind Raj for this episode of Humans of Healthcare. We'll be right back. Keep it here on Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, Lim Su, and you're listening to an episode of Humans of Healthcare, and today we are featuring the sports medicine physician, finding out how we can build fitter Malaysians. And here, joining me in the studio today to share more about his career and what this field actually entails is Dr. Arvind Raj. Now, Dr. Arvind, I'm going to get a bit personal with you here. You know, you are also a certified strength and conditioning specialist. I know you were actively competing in bodybuilding previously. You're also now doing powerlifting. You've got your own following on social media, people who are actively interested in the physical in the exercise field that you specialize in. I guess, how did you get into those scenes, you know, and was that something that influenced your decision to specialize in sports medicine, or was it the other way around?
That's a nail on the coffin there. Yeah, it actually was. I started off being in the fitness field at the young age of 15 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I was also a chubby kid at one point, and then I found my solace in fitness, and bodybuilding was the thing that was approachable at that point. So hence I got into bodybuilding, and eventually as I started like learning more about it, I was definitely intrigued about anatomy and physiology of the human body and how they move and how our body reacts to it, and how, you know, you see humans with different feats of strength and endurance. It's just amazing to watch. But when I was doing medicine, what sparked the interest in sports medicine is, who's taking care of these people?
Mm.
You know, who is making sure when they get injured, they get out of it and they go back to what they were doing.
Mm.
So hence, I really also spent a lot of time trying to improve myself in terms of management of those cases. And why did I do strength and conditioning? Is because I wanted to have a common language. So when I did strength and conditioning, I can understand what the athletes are going through. So I get to learn a little bit of their life and their feel and what is it that stresses them. And as a physician, I think once you understand what they're going through, you get to relate to them and they feel that they can relate to you. It's not just a doctor's going to listen, oh, you got knee pain? Yeah, just take this medication and you'll be fine. Or knee pain, just reduce the amount of work you do.
You've been in their position.
Exactly. So if you listen to an athlete speak, the last thing they want to listen to a doctor saying is stop doing what you're doing. Because that's what they love. That's what pays the food on the table. You know. So I want to give them an option of not stopping. Like, how can you work around this?
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. How do you have that discussion then? Because, you know, in some cases where they really need to stop, how do you have that discussion? Okay, this is what's best for your career in the long run.
Yeah. So there are injuries where you will need to put a full stop. But that's the thing. The injury is not the whole body. It could be a knee injury. Your upper body is still fine. You know? So I give them options of, okay, what can we do with the upper body while the lower body is resting? And then I will see you back in a short period of time. We'll reassess the lower body and I will decide if you can start moving it. And sometimes just as little as getting them to walk or move or do something that is remotely even close to what they were doing makes them feel happy. I've even gotten an athlete to bring their rugby ball to clinic and I'll get them to run in front of me with the rugby ball in their hand. It's not rugby, but just the feeling of holding the rugby ball while running. So I tell them, take your rugby ball and run on the field. You might not be tackling anybody, but just the feeling of having the rugby ball in your hand makes a lot of difference psychologically.
I was just going to mention that you're not just treating them physically, but there's a need to support them psychologically.
Of course. Yeah. And one of the assessments we do is a psychological assessment, because not everybody just get ready to get tackled again. Your knee might be fine, but you're not mentally ready to take on another tackle because the fear is there. So I have to work on the sports psychology as well. So that's partly of the things, one of the things that I do as well. I've done that also during the Asian Games when I actually was with the Malaysian powerlifting team. I have athletes coming to my room to talk to me about their fear of lifting the next day. So I spend a good half an hour, 45 minutes just calming them down. So that's part of my treatment as well. You know, sometimes it's not just expression of physical attributes, it's sometimes mental attributes as well.
All right. And for our listeners out there, if you have any questions you'd like to ask Dr. Arvin about his field of practice or anything about sports medicine, you can call us at 7733-2900. You can WhatsApp our U-Mobile number at 018-789-8899. Now, Dr. Arvin, you mentioned sports psychology, and that's an interesting aspect of sports medicine, right? What kind of subjects do you actually study, you know, to become a sports medicine physician, especially ones that I guess people might not realize is an important part of your work?
All right. So, yes, the basics of orthopedics are always going to be there with us. So we do learn anatomy, physiology, fracture management, injury management that is pertaining to musculoskeletal like injuries. But we also do spend time with sports psychologists, this person named Dr. Lim, a great man. I learned a lot from him. So he's based in UM. So he taught me a lot about sports psychology and how it's like to calm an athlete down, what are things you can do, because sports psychologists are not many in the country. So everybody might not get the ability to meet one. So we are the next best option, I guess. So that was one thing I did. The other thing I did was to learn biomechanics. That was definitely a very interesting field as well. And with all the gadgets that they have and see what is going on with the way they move. Like how do you adjust someone's bicycle so that they cycle better? Just by putting them through a biomechanist movement, because everybody moves differently. So you can't use the same bicycle for everybody. You know, so those things were very interesting. I remember there were friends who were snoozing in class. I was wide open. I'm like, wow, this thing is so good. You know, it's just so much fun to learn these things. So, and then we also go and attach ourselves with rehab physicians and see what their field is about. And rehab physicians have a lot of tricks up their sleeves as well. Which I got to learn, and they were very, very nice to teach me those things. And then we work with radiologists, like how do we ultrasound? So I do a lot of bedside ultrasounds, so I get to diagnose on the spot. So you don't actually have to go to a radiologist unless it's an advanced ultrasound investigation that you need to do, or CT scans or MRI, then we need them. But there are a lot of things we can do right next to our bed. And then we also had time with internal medicine physicians. So that means we learn about heart problems and lung problems and rheumatological problems. So because athletes can present with this. Athletes are not, you know, just because the athlete doesn't mean they don't have heart problems.
And you hear that quite often these
days. Yes, we do. So the thing is, the athlete might, we might be the first person they come in contact with. And when we do the ECG, we should be able to see what is problematic. And then if there is a problem, then we will call our cardiologist friends and get them to help us together with this case. Or rheumatological issues like rheumatoid arthritis. They could be a female athlete who's a professional volleyballer, or, you know, whichever sport, and she has rheumatological arthritis. So we need to treat that while she's still playing. So we need to know a little bit of that as well. So all of these things comes hand in hand in our job.
We have a question from Cheryl, who says she has always been curious, how do sports doctors get to be team doctors for our national athletes and sports teams? And I guess that's coming off you mentioning how you were also part of the Asian Games team, Dr. Arvin. You know, would doctors still do clinical work with regular patients as well?
Okay, this is a bit of a sensitive topic in our country at the moment, because there has been a lot of push and pull with this situation, simply because I think the direction of KKM was a bit different than what we want to do. So I don't want to get overly controversial with this, but me being someone who's already on my way out, actually. So I'm actively working with the Malaysian powerlifting team.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, I am the chief doctor of the national team.
Mm.
So we had the opportunity to host the Asian Games, Asian Powerlifting Meet last year in December.
Mm-hmm.
So I was the chief doctor for the event and chief doctor for the team.
Mm.
So because I'm a powerlifter myself, hence I was roped in to become the chief doctor. And likewise, there are a lot of other doctors out there, at the local setting at least, who are doctors of teams based on, say, football or rugby or whatever it is, whatever the interest is. And that is normally outside our working hours. So that means we have this kerja hakiki, right?
Mm.
From 8 a.m. to 5 o'clock, we are in our clinics. We are in the hospital. So we don't do things related to sports teams or whatever within these hours unless we get approval to do so. And if we do get approval to do so, then we get to go out and do other things out there. But it should never come in the way of treating clinical population.
Mm.
So that was at least the deal we have at the moment.
Mm. Yeah. What other settings could sports medicine physicians work in?
So I guess sports teams are the most important thing we work in. But we also work with, when it comes to creating awareness. So we actually work with other clinics. So for instance, we have diabetic patients in that clinic. So like Klinik Kesihatan, for instance. So recently we had a program where the Klinik Kesihatan wanted us to teach how to actually do basic exercise with their patients, because not everybody has the ability to meet a sports physician, but we want to encourage a physical activity with everybody. So we go and teach them how to teach their patients basic exercises and what are things you can do. So this way we get to get more people to do physical activity, of course at a lower level, but something is better than nothing.
Mm.
So these are the people we actually work with. So then we also do awareness programs at the state level and national level. So we do, like, we open up booths and like teach people about exercise and what is body fat percentage and so on and so forth. So these are things we also do as well.
Mm. A lot of Malaysians, Dr. Arvin, will also be very familiar with the National Sports Institute. Is that tied to KKM? Is that a separate organisation?
I guess they are not tied to KKM, but they do work hand in hand with KKM because that's under the Ministry of Sports.
Youth and Sports,
yeah. Youth and Sports, right? So YB Hannah Yeo is the leader of those. But we do work hand in hand, and there are times when they will ask KKM for help, especially when we need to go for outreach programs or coverage of like other parts of the country itself. So if they don't have enough hands, they do get our help. So that is actually one of the other places that I did my attachment as well in ISN. So that's where I got to meet all the professional athletes and some childhood heroes.
And fulfilling your dream
as
well.
Yeah, I mean, I was starstruck the moment I saw that. I'm like, my God, she's here.
I'm sure, I have to poke fun a bit, Dr. Arvin. You know, are all sports medicine physicians fit themselves?
Oh, yeah. You're putting me on the spot, aren't you?
I mean, you do so many things.
Yeah, but
is that the norm?
No, actually, it's quite the norm, actually. Mm. Actually, in majority of the cases, they are quite active people.
Mm.
You know, like my previous head was actually a very active, it was a Zumba coach. He used to teach Zumba. You know, so we have people like that. We have people who actually are very good marathon runners. We have people who are also in the basketball and football field as well.
Mm.
But whether they're athletes or not, that's not everybody. Mm. Yeah, they're active to a certain level.
To a certain level, right.
Yeah.
But I guess when it comes to exercise and rehab, Dr. Arvin, you know, I'm thinking about the general population or even people who are, you know, more active, right? They have goals they want to achieve after an injury or when they have a musculoskeletal problem. It's not uncommon to hear of people, okay, they want to rush through that process of recovery to get back on their feet faster. What are some of the advice that you give that patients most often ignore?
Do your rehab work. Because the problem with a lot of people is they expect, as you said, they expect results to happen like instantly.
Mm.
And majority of the time when they come to us with issues, it's not an issue that happened a day or two ago. Sometimes it's 3-4 years ago. So trying to reverse something that's been going on for 3-4 years doesn't happen necessarily within the next 2 or 3 weeks. It might take another six months to a year.
Mm.
So patients need to have some patience. You know, so I guess it always comes down to how you explain to them the process itself. And I think when someone is sat down and spoken to and say, okay, these are the things that are going on, these are the things that we're going to do. And we kind of explore these things in phases, I think we get to address their mental curiosity about where we're going to go with this. And I think with that, that actually helps them to calm down, and then we can see improvements happening in phases. Of course, this doesn't happen in every patient. Not every patient is that patient. And what happens is then we lose them after 6 months because they want to go for something that's quicker. And most of the time, it kind of U-turns back to us because eventually they find out we were actually right in the first place. So that can happen. But if you're talking with people who are a bit more educated, it's a lot easier to get the information to them, and they are a bit more patient with it. And also, they come to us a bit earlier. So in that way, I get to solve the problem a bit earlier.
Yeah. What has your work taught you about the importance of communication skills? Because that's what you were talking about, right? How you talk to patients about what they need to do.
I think that's at least 50% of fixing the problem, communication. Because communication has been probably one of the center of all the things that I do. From the point they walk in, the way we greet them, the way we relate to them, you know, they could come in for a knee problem, but because I've seen her for so long, I'm like, how was your travel to Taiwan and so on and so forth? She's like, wow, you actually remember that. You know, so that itself gives them a sense of calm, sense of happiness to meet the doctor. And there is always a saying that if you can treat, sometimes just by being more relatable to your patient, they feel a lot better. And when you can treat the mental part a bit more, you realize that the physical part actually does a lot better. So I think communication plays a very, very big role in actually treating any patient. So hence why we at Sports Vision kind of pride ourselves on spending time with our patients.
What are some of your most satisfying parts of your job?
When I finally get to discharge a patient, healthy. So I've actually, it's not always the easiest thing to do, but when I have patients who have had problems for years, I'm talking about 3-4 years of problems and never found a solution. And I've had a few of those actually. And when I finally do get to treat them to the point where they reach an acceptable level of activity and they are very, very happy to be discharged simply because they're like, I mean, after so long of dealing, of not having sleep, of not being able to move their hands, and finally when they do it and it's within what they can accept, they are very, very happy. And to me, that is probably the biggest joy, being able to treat someone to going back to doing what they were doing and hoping never to see them in my clinic again. Not because I don't want to see them, just hoping they never get injured again. Yeah.
How do you, and when you set goals with patients, right, how much of it is based on what the patient wants and what you think is feasible?
I think we got to meet them halfway. You know, it's not always my way or the highway. Sometimes you do have to understand everybody has different wants and needs. And if it's an athlete normally, they always do want to go back to playing. The first thing they ask me is, when can I go back to playing? So I have to be able to give them a timeline. So in that way, I'm convincing them to kind of like stick to the process and we will get there. And likewise with the normal person as well, they are also looking forward to being able to live a normal life, to be able to move that hand again, to be able to sleep again properly. So all of these things, right? So we do want to hear what their wants are and we want to set our goals in order for us to meet somewhere halfway. Yeah.
We've got a couple of questions coming in from listeners, more about their own concerns. So we have one who is asking about her her mom. Says my mom is in her 80s. She's experiencing weak calves, if I've got this right. She does light exercise daily as she has a degenerated spine and also a total knee replacement previously. So before we see someone like you, a sports medicine specialist, Dr. Arvind, do they need an X-ray or MRI when the last one was done more than 2 to 3 years ago?
No, actually no. I do not expect any investigation to be done by any patients who come and see me because I do not want to be have a preconceived notion about the case. So I would like to know just what your problem is, and I would like to like talk to you first, examine you properly, and then decide if another MRI or X-ray or whatever is needed. Because I was taught this particular thing by a very, very good expert when I was in medical school. There should be only 2 reasons for why you should do an investigation. It's going to change the way you're going to manage the case. It's going to give you an information that you never knew before. And if I don't see it necessary to investigate the patient unnecessarily, I do not simply investigate a patient. Because it's number one, it's costly. And number two, it's going to clog up the system further. Yeah, and we're going to delay management.
All right. Another listener says they are a runner and I love to run, but I've not been doing that since the COVID-19 pandemic start. I'm currently having some knee problems and I would love to run again, but how do I start? You know, do I get good running shoes? I have no problems doing a few kilometers hiking, but would love to go back into running. So I guess for someone who's had that break, Dr. Arvin, and is currently having some knee problems, you know, how do they get back into it?
Okay, so with everything, I think gradual reintroduction will be the best thing to do. So you could start off with just maybe short runs. It could be just 10, 15 minutes of run with the pace that you would think it's easy to do.
Mm.
And if you do not find any problem with that, or your legs don't kind of crank up with you, or your knee doesn't get cranky with that, then you gradually increase the duration and the length of that run. Now, running shoes are one in a million. There's so many
your
types of running.
Your spot for choice.
Yeah, your spot for choice nowadays, and they're getting more and more expensive. And most of the time, the best running shoes are in the best legs. I mean, if Kipchoge is using a running shoe, because he's a good runner first, not because the running shoe made him a good runner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there are a lot of things there. So I don't think you should be investing too much into a shoe, but at the same time, if you're someone who's running on the road, investing in a good pair of shoes will prevent you from getting problems, you know. And I will normally, even when it comes to running surfaces, I normally would try to get people to run on fields or tracks first, because they're less, I guess the reaction on the knee is a bit lesser.
Mm.
And it doesn't irritate your knee, then you move on slowly onto road running. Because as you know, the roads are hard. So when roads are hard, there's a lot more impacts in the knee and ankle and hips, especially, and even the spine. So we want to, with all of this, we want to reintroduce. So do not rush back into running, because the pandemic has been a long time.
And that would be the temptation, right? To rush back into it. I could do it 3 years ago. I can do it now.
Yeah. So that's normally a recipe for disaster. Just to pick up and do it again, it could be a recipe for disaster. But then again, you have to understand, you've been doing it for a very long time. You wouldn't have lost touch completely.
Mm.
You just need to give yourself a little bit of time just to get back into those groove, and then you'll be fine.
Mm.
You know? And if your knee pain keeps creeping up, well, you can come and see me. I'll see what's up.
So coming back to the idea of, you know, getting young doctors into sports medicine, we have another message from a listener who's asking, you know, as Malaysia progresses into sustainable healthcare living, how do you see sports medicine specialists contribute to a new generation of fitness enthusiasts? And we do seem to see a lot more people trying to, you know, get themselves fitter, especially as a lot of us are now leading sedentary lifestyles.
I guess this is a very good question, actually. I'm actively working on this, actually.
Mm.
So one of the things I'm actually doing is I'm trying to connect with personal trainers and fitness trainers and so on, and trying to see if we could actually work together. Why? Because not everybody that comes to them are people with no disorders or no non-communicable diseases like diabetes and hypertension. People have those things. So they're all very worried to exercise simply because they're scared that their health will go south if they start exercising a bit more aggressively. So here's where the sports physician comes in and kind of assesses this patient. We get to assess this patient and see where this safe zone is.
Mm.
So I will be able to communicate with my trainer friends or personal trainers to tell them that how far can you push this patient based on their current status. Then maybe 6 months down the road, we can reassess them and see if they can be moving the intensity of their workouts a bit more intense, you know. So on the other hand, sports medicine physicians are also working hand in hand to kind of debunk some issues, actually. If you see my content, I'm actually trying to debunk a lot of things. Like some people say, like, you know, squatting your knees past your toes is bad for your knees, when it was never bad for your knees to start with. So these things have to be removed from the information arena, and we got to put in a fresh new information to people out there. Of course, in a more approachable manner. Everything can be put in medical terms, you see.
Mm.
So I'm also trying to actively do that, to kind of educate people about what the importance of exercise and nutrition, sleep. And these are what people in the allied health has been trying to do. So I'm just lending a hand at this point.
Mm, all right. And would you have a message to young doctors who are listening, you know, or whether, you know, maybe they're still contemplating joining medical school, or if they're contemplating their specialization, what would your message to them be?
I guess with sports medicine, I think the first thing that I would like to remove from people's thoughts is we are only treating professional athletes. You have to understand, athlete comes in all shapes and sizes. If you're someone who actually joins the KL marathon, You're technically an athlete.
Mm.
Okay, you're a competitive athlete. So you, if you're training for a particular sports endeavor, you're already an athlete. Just that you're not a professional athlete, but you will also have the injuries that come with professional athletes. And likewise, as Sports Physician, we want people to know that we are trying to get more Malaysians to be active. You could be 60, you could be 70, you could have some knee pain, some shoulder pain. I would find a way to make you active. So we want a healthier population because with a healthier population, we'll be able to reduce the burden on the healthcare system and more people have better days. So I think as what I would tell to my junior doctors is sports medicine is more than just sports. You should be able to treat Kanchils and Ferraris. Yeah.
And before I let you go, Dr. Ari, we have one more message that just came in. Someone asking, is it true that brisk walking is a better exercise than running?
Because later years, we got knee problems.
Yeah.
No, that's actually not very true. Mm. Brisk walking is definitely easier on the knees. But if you've been running for many years, your knee will actually adapt. So our knees are not like car tires. They don't wear off that fast.
Mm-hmm.
If you have proper nutrition, proper planning if you're running, you could actually hold on to your knee health for a very, very long time. You know, as I told you earlier, I've got an auntie who runs at the age of 65,
mm-hmm.
42 km. That's
what a lot of us aspire to do.
I mean, if I could run 10, I'd be happy. And she could do 42. So I'm very impressed. So that's the thing. I've seen a lot of elderly aunties and uncles who are still doing it, just that they're managing what they're doing based on their age.
Mm.
So as long as you can manage those things, you can manage your training outcomes, your exercise outcomes, and your volume and how you do it, I think your knees will be fine. You know, whether it's good or not is really up to the person.
Okay, all right. Thank you so much for joining me on the show today, Dr. Arvind.
All right.
I've been speaking to consultant sports medicine physician, Dr. Arvind Raj, for this episode of Humans of Healthcare. I'm Lim Suan, and this has been Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.